Why go back to Congress? Do you think you'd bring the same approach to Congress this time around, or would you do anything differently when you get there?
Well, I think most people in New Hampshire and around the country are certainly frustrated with the lack of progress in terms of trying to get issues addressed. There always has been this concern about the lack of bipartisanship and an ability to get your goals and objectives achieved. And I feel very strongly about public service, about serving people in the state. And I think that I can bring a perspective, being a former business owner, a former mayor, and a former member of the U.S. House of Representatives, that allows for New Hampshire's voice to be heard in a way that we can be pragmatic, productive, and thoughtful.
What specifically do you think can be done to change the culture in Washington? Obviously, partisanship as strong as ever. What can be done going forward?
Well, I would point first to when I was mayor. I was, as a Republican, had a supermajority of Democrats on the Board of Aldermen. We checked political affiliation at the door and were able to get a lot of things accomplished. We were able to get the first tax cut in a decade accomplished, cutting borrowing in half to strengthen our fiscal position, to have a focus on addressing the violent crime problem that our state's largest city was going through at the time, bringing an ability to sort of retrain employees to utilize individual assets amongst all different agencies. And we ended up being rated one of the best managed cities, medium-sized cities in America as a result of that. Secondly, in Congress, I was able to, as a freshman in the 112th Congress, get three bills signed into law by this president. Not an easy feat, considering the amount of concern there was about the lack of bipartisanship. So moving forward into 2014, I think what people want are two or three basic things. Number one, there's still a lot of concern about the opportunity to get a good job for you, for your family, for your children, grandchildren. That means we've got to have a willingness on both sides to do economic growth, overall tax reform. So that's going to be pretty integral, I think. Secondly, you've had the Affordable Care Act now in for 4 years. There are really, two camps. I mean, you've got a lot of people like Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter that double down on it, support it 100%. I think that's an unfair view. There are people in the state of New Hampshire that don't like it, that have not received the benefit from it. And I think you need alternatives to replace not just the Affordable Care Act, but really to try to fix the problem here in New Hampshire and New England. So that's a secondary thing that I think is on people's minds. And then obviously of late, the president and how he has handled things have been on people's mind. And as a result, they want to know how those Democrats in office that support the president, how they differ from the president. You're not hearing a lot of that right now from Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter.
Okay, let's get back to health care for a moment, assuming that you do get back to Washington. And it's clear that a full repeal of the Affordable Care Act would not get past the president's desk. So what do you think needs to be done in the short term to address some of the issues you have with the law? You're talking about maybe piecemeal.
When the president first started down the road of trying to deal with health care, there were two main goals and objectives: make health insurance more affordable and make health care more accessible. I think we all agree with those goals. I certainly do. And the people that I speak with on a regular basis, regardless of party affiliation, believe in those two objectives. Here in New Hampshire, what we have experienced is something different. A lot of people, thousands of people, ultimately lost their health insurance. Then they are forced to go on the exchange. The exchange so far excluded 10 of the 26 hospitals in New Hampshire.
And that, it also that excluded, is changing, as we know. New plans
I'll get to that. Yeah. And it excluded 1,000 doctors. So in the areas of New Hampshire that I represent, particularly Rochester and Portsmouth, let's take Frisbee Hospital. You have 7,000 people who live in Rochester who were receiving care, uncompensated care, at Frisbee Hospital, which was a decision that Frisbee Hospital made. Those 7,000 people are no longer now able to get care at that hospital, and including their physicians. They've got to go to Dover. They've got to go to another part of the region 30 minutes or more away. That, to me, is not reaching the goal and objectives that the president set out. And those are legitimate issues that we've got to fix. So as a result, there have been some carriers who said, well, we are going to, whether it's 2014 or 2015, come and create our own exchanges. And I applaud that. However, the concern and the problem that you're seeing with the creation of those exchanges is that they're going to be regional-based. They're not going to be, in large part, state-based. So you're not bringing the kind of competition into the state and into the region that we once had, 15, 20 years ago. So how do you solve that? One thing that I think we need to do, and I've talked to members of Congress in New England about this, I've talked to insurance commissioners in New England about this, I think New Hampshire and New England needs to be regionalized. So if we could eradicate those state line borders, just start with our region. So every carrier has the ability now to compete, not just in New Hampshire, but in New England as a region. You will bring more competitive market forces to this area, probably upwards of 30 carriers or more. That helps the small business owner. That helps the small business owner's employees. And that helps the individual who wants to purchase on the individual market outside of their employment. It also helps those organizations, communities, municipalities, and businesses that choose to be self-insured, because now you have more opportunities within the market.
And a bigger pool, obviously, you have more choices.
And that was the biggest problem, I think, when we changed to community rating. It did ultimately have a negative impact of having carriers leave the state quite quickly, to the point where we had effectively one carrier in Anthem. I mean, you have a little bit of Cigna, you have a little bit of MVP, you have a little bit of Harvard Pilgrim Health, but the dominant carrier is Anthem. And I've even talked to Anthem about, would you oppose more competition in the state and the region? And their answer is no, we don't oppose that at all. So I think when you're talking about solutions and trying to get more accessibility and more affordability, those things are critical when you start to consider the fact that our economic climate still has not been favorable, considering people's average weekly wage, considering their earning power and buying power, and considering where people feel about the economic conditions. They just don't feel like our economy has come back strong. So when you put it in that context, you need people who understand that there are solutions outside of either saying, you know, I just support the Affordable Care Act and the president 100% doubling down. That just doesn't solve the problem that faces most Granite Staters.
Is there a will, though, in the Republican Party to look at those kinds of solutions?
Well, there are solutions right now.
Rather than outright repeal?
Sure. There are solutions right now in the United States House and the United States Senate that repeal but do replace with these types of solutions. You don't get to hear a lot of that, but I will tell you, Republicans will say that, hey, look, we do have solutions. I mean, they're on our – we've brought them into committee. We've got them on our websites. You know, the biggest challenge in the Senate that senators claim is that, you know, Harry Reid won't allow some of these bills to come up for a vote, and that's his prerogative. He is the leader of the Senate. But when we want to try to be, you know, honest with the electorate and the voters and the people who care deeply about trying to solve problems, let's look at it honestly. You know, Republicans do have solutions. If Harry Reid refuses to bring those legislative solutions up, there's not much that can be done about it except for what happens in November at the ballot box.
Let's talk about immigration for a moment. What type of reform will you support, and why do you think it's been so difficult for Congress to get anything done on this issue?
Let's look at the current issue of the border crisis. This started 2 years ago in 2012 when the president issued a DACA order. It was not an executive order. It was a memorandum directly to Homeland Security that essentially allowed people to come across the border without any kind of legal reprisal. So essentially, it's said that you can have amnesty if you come across this border.
There was in certain cases. There wasn't.
No. This was a blanket. This was a blanket memorandum that the president ordered issued to Department of Homeland Security back in 2012. And then he re-upped the order earlier this year because it was a two-year order that was expiring in June of 2014. He re-upped it in, I think it was April or May timeframe of 2014, for another 2 years. So when you start at that perspective, we have had, just since April of this year, 300,000 people come across that border illegally. A lot of the attention has been focused on the children, which should get attention. But the larger picture has not completely developed in that it started with a memorandum. So, number one, we've got to rescind that memorandum. I've asked and called on Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter to agree with me on that perspective. You have had high-profile Democrats like Secretary of State Hillary Clinton claim that that would be a step in the right direction to start with that kind of rescission. And then you have a process by which there is due process for those individuals. And if there is a legitimate reason, whether they're fleeing, you know, for political purposes or if they're at risk for their lives, then they wouldn't necessarily be sent back. But the vast majority of those individuals can be returned to their home countries with their families.
But it is true that the administration has stepped up deportations and returning illegals, illegal immigration.
Well,
illegal
you can step up deportations. However, when you issue a direct order and essentially have 300,000 people come from April to today, it almost seems like they're acting in opposition of one another. They have a policy where they have claimed that the deportations are increased, but then they have another policy that has just allowed another 300,000 people to come across the border. So that, to me, doesn't seem consistent with trying to solve the problem. So right now, the immediate issue is let's stop this border crisis. And I think the best way to do that is to rescind that order. And then you deal with the people who have come across and try to find a way to return them safely with their families in their home countries. And you're hearing from Democrat governors across the country that say, well, wait a minute, we can't handle some of the people that you're sending to our states. This is no longer, you know, in my view, deemed a totally partisan issue. I mean, you've got just as many Democrat governors and leaders saying, hey, this is just not acceptable public policy, and it's got to change.
There's no shortage of issues in the Middle East right now. And what's your take on how the current administration is handling things in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, I'm disappointed on a whole host of issues. It's not just Iraq and Afghanistan, but Israel, as well as the Ukraine issue. I think there has been almost a level of disengagement from this president that I don't quite understand. And again, he's being criticized, you know, not just by Republicans, but by Democrats now as well for the way he's handling things. So, you know, number one, let me go through them very quickly if I can. Russia and Ukraine. We've got to have a clear and concise point of statement, in fact, to Russia. You've got to have the European Union stand up very strongly and tell him that he's got to withdraw those troops. Otherwise, his country will suffer and suffer far more than what sanctions have been authorized. But what that takes is the European Union to be strong here, and so far they haven't been because they rely on natural gas.
A lot of economic factors.
Which is
what can the administration do?
Well, it starts with leadership. You have to lead. As the President of the United States, you immediately should be creating a coalition of leaders in Europe that sit down and make President Putin understand that it's unacceptable. He doesn't feel that whatever the President of the United States has said is legitimate and real. And that goes back, you know, historically over several years now in the relationship between President Obama and President Putin. So that's a fundamental problem. When you look at Israel, Israel continues to be bombed by Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization. In their charter, they state and claim that they want to not only eviscerate Israel, but all Jews. That, to me, is unacceptable. It's wrong. Israel not only has a right to defend itself, but I hope will continue to receive the support of the United States, because we cannot allow these terrorist organizations to think and feel that their policy of eviscerating an entire group, ethnic group, is right or just. And then you see what's going on in Iraq. ISIS is now somewhere between 15 and 20,000 strong. and their assets are now about $2 billion, and counting, by the way. 3 months ago, they were about 1,000 strong and $450 million in wealth. They're going to continue to grow in strength, as well as the geographic regions along Syria and Iraq. That cannot be allowed to happen. And it's not just because of American locations in that region. It's because of the genocide against Christians. It's because they want to take over this geographic region, and they have a very similar fundamental approach that Hamas does relative to Americans, in that they want to eviscerate Americans.
Getting back to the administration and what possible solutions there are, the vast majority of surveys show Americans do not want boots back on the ground in the region. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the president's been hesitant to put them there anyway. What can he do? What can the administration do?
I, like many Americans, are frustrated with this notion of boots on the ground and war. I don't want to be in war. Americans don't want to be at war.
Well, sure, no one does, but is that what it has to come down to?
Well, what I would have preferred is several months ago a precise attack that could have eviscerated the 1,000 or so ISIS members. When we didn't do that and allowed this problem to grow to 15,000 to 20,000 strong, it becomes more difficult to do this in a precision-based way. It's not impossible. But there has to be a clear definition of what the goal is. And I still don't think we've had a clear definition. So far, the president has said, well, we're doing this because we have American assets that we're protecting. I think there realistically is a wider concern here. I mean, when you are beheading children and families because they refuse to leave their Christian roots, that says something about the group that is terrorizing Iraqis. Not to mention, it's more than 1 million people have been displaced because of this crisis. So I think at this point, the president needs to continue the humanitarian effort. You need to have the precision-based strikes on the ISIS assets. However, you're seeing them start to disperse amongst civilians as a method of protecting themselves. So the president's going to have to come up with a strategy that doesn't just contain but has to eradicate ISIS, because we Americans would rather, I think, finish this now than deal with it for years and years and years and allow ISIS to become the next al-Qaeda.
On the Patriot Act, you've said that, quote, you either stand for the terrorists or you stand for freedom and protecting Americans. I mean, is it really that black and white?
No. You know, the issue is far more complex than that. You know, you got to start with where we were when we were first attacked on 9/11 and the reasons for the Patriot Act getting the bipartisan support in the House and the Senate that it did. It has been reauthorized. It was reauthorized in the 112th Congress when I served. My feeling is this: there has to be a balance between security and privacy. There's no question about that. But it is not all or nothing. You've got to make sure that we have the capability and ability to adhere to the Constitution and protect Americans. And given the fact that we're talking about an enemy that is a different type of enemy, they're terrorists who their goal is a long-term goal, not a short-term goal, to kill Americans. That's an ugly fact. But we also need to make sure that the government is not allowed to get so deep into, you know, Americans' personal lives and private, whether it's your computer or your phone, there has to be that balance there. There's no question.
Yeah, well, you know, why do you think there's been some pushback on that act as Americans have found out more about it? Is it because America hasn't been directly attacked? Is it because we haven't had a 9/11 style attack now for, you know, 12 years? What is the reason you think people are, in survey after survey, a lot more leery about it?
Well, I don't think it's the Patriot Act itself. I think it's two things. It's Edward Snowden, mm-hmm. And the documents that he uncovered, and this administration's blatant disregard for the law relative to how the NSA was essentially obtaining information about Americans. Remember, there was not one piece of legislation that was voted on that allowed this administration to do what it did through
Much of those procedures were happening prior to the Obama administration as well. I mean,
but my point is, in Congress, there was no authorization of those acts. So you can talk about whether those acts happened with previous administrations. I never authorized any of that, and Congress had not authorized the abuses that were going on. So given the time we're in and that President Obama is the president, I'll focus on, you know, what the NSA did under his administration. It was wrong, but it wasn't authorized. And since then, the United States House of Representatives has taken action to further restrict the NSA's ability to go spy on Americans. And they should take that that extra step, because it's clearly necessary, because there was an abuse of power.
Anything else you think you want to cover? Anything else you think we should be? Anything else you would like me to ask you?
Well, you know, it's been a privilege to run. The campaign has been a great campaign. You know, I feel very fortunate to be in the position to run and to serve the people of the state of New Hampshire. You know, I look forward to having, you know, their support and focusing on what will be, I think, a very important election in November between myself and Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter. We're both fairly known entities. And I think, you know, what some of the differences that will be articulated are beyond just the national issues, sort of localized issues as well. And, you know, she and I differ in several areas, but here on local issues, you know, they're very different opinions on two important areas, Great Bay, which is in the heart of our district, and how I feel very strongly that, you know, the contiguous communities need a voice relative to what the EPA is trying to mandate in terms of the cost structure for their new wastewater treatment plants programs, which would essentially, you know, raise water rates 2 to 3 times in these contiguous communities. She's consistently taking the side of the EPA, and I was able to, again, when I was in Congress, get bipartisan support from the delegation, myself, Kelly Ayotte, Charlie Bass, Gene Shaheen, and then Governor John Lynch, in a solution that made sense for all sides. Another area where Carol and I disagree is in our fisheries industry. You know, she has been taking the side of the federal government against our small fishermen, which is an important industry historically to New Hampshire, but it's also still remains important economically. So I think you'll end up seeing a lot of more localized issues, and how we have been respectful to the concerns of the constituents that we represent, and how, you know, we handle those things. The constituent service is still very important in the state of New Hampshire. You know, part of your job as a member of Congress is to be down in D.C. and vote and attend committee hearings. But there's a whole host of other responsibilities that you have here in New Hampshire. And I think you'll see a lot of that in the campaign.
Frank Gitta, thanks for the time.
Thank you.